meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 9:40 a.m. on Sunday, April 17th, 2016. Present, we have Representative Wilson, Representative Guerra, Vice Chair Sadler. I'm Co-Chair Newman, I'm Co-Chair Thompson, and Representative Gaddis. Please make sure your electronic devices are turned off, no cell phones or anything in the committee. Today we'll be hearing SJR 2, Constitutional Amendment, GO Bonds for Student Loans. And we're going to hear SJR 2, it's been repeated on my script twice. Here to present the bill to the committee is from the sponsor, Senator McKinnon's office, Kristen Pratt. If you'd please come to the table, place yourself on the record, and tell us about SJR 2.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Kristen Pratt. I'm staff to Senator Anna McKinnon. She sends her regrets for not being able to make it. She's currently sharing Senate finance right now. But she wanted me to thank you for hearing this legislation. SJR 2 is a constitutional amendment that would permit the issuance of general obligation bonds for the purpose of funding post-secondary student loans. It amends Article 9, Section 8 of the Constitution, which currently allows state debt to be contracted for capital improvements and housing loans for veterans. The intent of this legislation is both to access lower-cost loans to have lower interest rates for borrowers, as well as to give the Alaska Student Loan Corporation more flexibility with their underwriting criteria. It's pretty straightforward. However, Diane Behrens from the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education is in the room if there are any questions.
We have questions. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Pratt, you say that SJR 2, if approved by the voters, would allow increased criteria flexibility. What does that mean? That's a bit of an underwriting term. What does that mean in terms of?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, I actually think Diane would be best able to answer that question, so if I can defer to her.
Please come to the table. Pull the microphone down a little closer than where it is, and place yourself on the record, and we have some questions for you.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Diane Behrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education and the Executive Officer of the Alaska Student Loan Corporation. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing the bill this morning. This bill, to Representative Sadler's question through the chair, currently, in order for the underlying assets, the student loans themselves, to be of sufficient quality to use in the issuance of bonds, our revenue bonds, we have to have a minimum credit criteria associated with those. That credit criteria currently is 680 FICO score. As Ms. Pratt indicated, if we have the state's credit behind the bonds in the terms of a GO bond, we would be able to modify that credit criteria somewhat, allowing a greater, a larger group of students to qualify. Yes.
To the chair.
Representative Sadler.
Yeah, and just to put a finer point on it, so you could offer loans to students with lower credit scores.
That's exactly right, through the chair.
Can I follow up on another point?
Representative Sadler.
Ms. Behrens, if you can give us a little bit of background on the number of loans that the commission issues for post-secondary tuition in a year, and also speak to the amount of students that are approved and the amount that are rejected for their applications.
Certainly. Through the chair, Representative Sadler, on an annual basis, the student loans have been issued to as many as 12,000 students in a year. Currently, those numbers have dropped substantially. We now make just several hundred loans a year, and that's due in part to the interest rates that we're charging, that consumers are concerned that those rates are excessive. We also have the credit criteria. We have about 40% of the applicants who do not qualify and are unable to get a cosigner who meets those criteria.
And last one, if I could.
Representative Sadler, one more.
If you could, Ms. Behrens, through the chair, kind of put, normal everyday numbers on it. What interest rates can the Corporate Commission now offer versus what other financial loans might be available elsewhere?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, the interest rate that we've been charging the last two or three years is 6.25%. For unsecured credit, that is actually a fairly good interest rate. If you were to look at other student loan programs around the country, non-federal student loans, you would see similar rates, although some of them have higher credit criteria on those. We expect that if the state is able to maintain its AAA rating, that we would be able to decrease the interest on our loans by a full percent, if not a little bit more. So we would be looking at right around a 5% interest rate on those loans, which would be very attractive and really amongst the best in the country.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support the bill. I've supported it every time it's come through. Given the interest rates that we charge. Just a question. Back in 2008, 2009, when we had the national financial crisis, I think we changed things so people had to have a, students had to have a signer, a co-signer when they didn't before. Is that something that's still necessary? I'm just thinking about people who don't have a parent that has any money.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, we do, if the student does not have sufficiently high credit, then they do have to have a creditworthy cosigner. That is not something that I would expect to change. Even with a GO bond, there's an expectation that the assets of the corporation will be sufficient to ensure that the cash flow on those loans repay the debt. There's no expectation that we would look to the state to have general funds paying down any general obligation bonds. So while we believe the lowering of the credit score requirement will be very helpful in allowing students to qualify on their own credit, if they are unable to, they will still have to find a creditworthy cosigner.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Chair.
Hold your microphone up a little.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. It's obviously a problem, but it's not a problem we can solve with this bill, so I'll just figure something out during the off session.
Thank you, Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've supported this bill, too, since the beginning and since we were talking about it. But at a time when this was first introduced, we had a great credit rating, and I'm wondering how the impact will be if we don't have such a stellar credit rating, if we get downgraded in the near future, and whether it will, I guess, be even worth it to open up the Constitution to change this particular article.
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, we have asked our financial advisor to do an analysis. If the state were to experience an entire step downgrade, it would still allow us to reduce the interest cost by about 95 basis points. So it would be a substantial benefit even at that next level down.
Okay, great.
All
Thank
up,
you.
Representative Kawasaki.
That's it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have further questions from the committee at this time. Seeing none at this time, I want to thank you for the presentation, and we might have some more questions towards the, after we get through with public testimony. Okay, at this time, I'd like to open SJR2 for public testimony. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Is there anyone online? Yes, we do. We have Sterling Gallagher. Sterling, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, place yourself on the record, and we'll hear your testimony.
Hi, my name is Sterling Gallagher. I'm the back in ancient history, I was the commissioner of revenue who put together the permanent fund. After that, I was the bond underwriter for the state on many of the AHFC ADA, and I was the underwriter on this bond issue. Student Loan Authority. I put together the original loan bond issue for this authority that set it up, and that program has worked for now 25 years, and it's worked like it's supposed to. This agency is designed around cash flow, and that is the problem with this agency. Currently, this agency has a default rate of 28%. Of every loan we make, 28% are in default. The other thing, when you look at this agency, it had a total expenditure last year of expenses of $15 million to administrate $350 million of loans, approximately. You do the math, it costs 4% to administer every one of these loans. And if you look at the loans they originated last year, they only originated $3.2 million, so if you take the $15 million and times it that way, it was the cost of administration was four times every loan we made. This agency, in my view, needs a serious review as to its performance before we get off into the general obligation area. One of the general obligation area should be preserved for what is actually, it's our first line of defense in all sorts of major areas of finance. Let's say we have another earthquake. Whatever happens in this state, the general obligation is our first line of defense. This agency wants to start cutting away at those numbers that and our flexibility on general obligation by issuing these sorts of debts that have a 28% default rate, that are have a a cost of administration that's 4% of the assets, three to four times cost for every loan they make. To me, this is a program that needs serious review before we put it in front of the general obligation credit of the state. As to the bond structure she was talking about, the answer is the current structure can also be made to lower those interest rates. The status of AA, this agency would, because of the moral obligation that's attached to it, would trade basically 10 or 15 basis points behind it. I think that's a very small price to pay for maintaining your flexibility on your general obligation debt, and this agency can work out its problems. What it needs is more collateral, and it doesn't necessarily need cash. You could take loans from AHFC, you could take loans from any one of the programs and put it in here, and what they need is quality cash flow in this program, not necessarily, it's the 28% default rate. Nationally, that rate is 40%. So, and there's just been a crack in the door in the last two weeks where under a federal court in the state of New York has allowed these debts not to be charged off in bankruptcy. So this whole area is under flux nationally. This program needs serious review as to its accomplishments and what we're getting for its money, and I think it's quite dangerous to put this in front of the general obligation debt where you lose the state's flexibility in this time of crisis. That's my testimony.
Yeah, let's see if we have any questions, Mr. Gallagher. I don't see any questions around the table. Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anybody else online that would like to testify? Okay, with that, nobody else in the room? I'll close public testimony. Excuse me. We also have in the room, I believe, Charlene Morrison is the Chief Finance Officer, Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. Is she here?
Online.
She's online. She's here to answer questions if anybody has any additionals. We're back to the committee. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the gentleman talked about $15 million being by the department. How much does that influence the interest rate for our students?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we actually do a calculation on the interest rate. I would, Ms. Morrison has recently done the calculation to set our 2016-17 interest rates. If I could defer to her, she can tell you what portion of our current interest rate is the cost of servicing piece.
Ms. Morrison, you're online. Hello?
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, and for the record, Charlene Morrison, the Chief Finance Officer for the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education, as well as the Alaska Student Loan Corporation. Included in the calculation that Ms. Behrens just mentioned is both the cost of administration, which runs at about 2.5% of that interest rate.
Jenny Wilson?
So the 2.5% is the addition. So what is the new calculation that you just finished that Ms. Behrens was talking about? Well, 2.5.
I'm sorry, I didn't get the full question.
Okay, so the 2.5% is the administration cost, but what would be the interest loan for a new loan today by a student getting ready to go to college?
So the interest rate, as Ms. Behrens mentioned, through the chair, excuse me, the interest rate for the coming academic year is 6.25%.
Follow up?
Representative Wilson.
So that 6.25%, I just want to make sure, includes the 2.5% administration fee.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, yes, that is correct.
Okay, and a follow-up?
Representative Wilson.
So if we're talking about the bonds here, dropping it down a percent, that would mean the potential of 5.25%, but we'd still be adding on the 2.5, so we're still almost 8% interest.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, no, that is incorrect. If the state were to maintain the AAA rating and if the market were to be in the same place as it is, was about 2 weeks ago when we developed this rate, the interest rate could drop as low as 5.25%.
Representative Wilson?
Okay, sorry, I was using that Common Core math again. Oh, the 6.25%, I forgot to take off the 2.5. That was the total amount. I guess I'm just trying to break down because the 2.5% is almost as much interest as we're charging students. So we're almost doubling it because of our administration costs. So I'll check with the sponsor, make sure I have my numbers. But one other question to whomever can answer it. So with this going to the voters, will there be, and it's approved, will there be a limit on how much money can be put into the bonds?
This is Diane Behrens for the record, through the chair, Representative Wilson. Yes, what would happen is if this question is put on before the voters, they indicated yes, they would want to allow this modification of the Constitution. We would come back to the legislature, and the legislature would have to authorize through legislation sort of the rules, the operating rules for the corporation to proceed. That would include a cap similar to the caps that HFC has had in place on its issuance of debt for their veterans home loan program.
And a final question?
Representative Wilson.
And within that, then you would have to be able to come back, because this 28% is pretty scary, but you would have to be able to show that through your receipts you could cover the bond, assuming that this many or even more were not to do it, so that we wouldn't be looking at general funds to cover it.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that's absolutely correct. It's similar to what we do today when we go into the market. We have to provide cash flows to the rating agencies so that they can verify and rate the issuance of the bonds. And I would note that the corporation has successfully issued $1.6 billion in debt since 1988, has had the moral obligation of the state supporting it, has never had to ask the state for any cash support. The legislature did authorize a bridge loan several years back to assist us for a short period of time. The corporation used that loan, fully repaid it to the state, and so we've not ever had to place a call on the legislature to support us, and we would expect that to continue going forward.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Guerra.
So just briefly, the cost of administration are going to go down. The conference committee has cut a couple of positions at the Student Loan Corporation. Comment and then a question so we can get some sense. Obviously, you have to do some outreach to let students who don't know that there is a student loan program. That's part of your job. But banks, they do advertisements, so they do outreach for their businesses. What is your cost of administration compared to maybe – do you have any idea of what your cost of administration are compared to other state student loan agencies or financial institutions, or is that just too complex a question?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, I can't really speak to the cost of other organizations. The scale of operation, of course, is an issue. And as we've seen our loan volume decline the last several years, that affects the scale. I would just, in response to the public comment from Mr. Gallagher, our default rate is not 28%. Our default rate fluctuates. We calculate it on an annual basis, and I think most recent rates were around 7.8%. So that's a factor in the cost of administering the loans, and that does impact our servicing costs as well.
That's quite a variation in default rates. We've just heard this 28% clear down to 7.8. Why do we hear this big differential in that?
Well, Mr. Chair, I have testified in the past that in the late 80s, early 90s, the default rates on the loans were very high, in the 20% range. So I don't know. I can't speak to what Mr. Gallagher's source of information was, but we've had that rate substantially reduced over years, in part because of putting in place some of the collection levers that the legislature has given us, the credit criteria. At the time the rates were that high, we had no credit criteria at all, and no cosigner requirements. So we did see very high default rates through the 80s and into the early 90s.
Do you have another follow-up, Representative Guerra?
No.
Co-Chair Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Barnes, if we approve this, gets passed through the House, both bodies, goes to the public approves of it, but say next year the legislature comes back, takes a look at the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education to look and see what your actual costs are for administrative costs, and we find that maybe there needs to be a change or something like that. Is there anything in this bill that would lock the legislature into any future commitments on how we manage this fund?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, not that I'm aware of, no.
Vice Chair, Co-Chair Newman.
I think we need to probably take a look at what some of the things are going on interior there. So if, whoever's here sitting around next time, maybe should probably, I think, address it, look at the costs. We looked at some of the costs that it does take, and I believe that the operational costs were upwards of between $1.2 and $1.4 million to operate this program. And is that correct? An administrative cost?
Co-Chair Newman, our administrative costs have actually reduced over the last 2 years. There are some increased costs, but they're relative to pass-through funds. The WAMI program budget sits within our organizational budget. There were some increases until the last year or so, and then that has been relatively flat. The other new monies to us have been pass-through funds for scholarships and grants. So,
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got just a couple kind of cleanup questions. Through the chair, Ms. Behrens, can we consider the Commission on Post-Secondary Education and the Alaska Student Loan Corporation as essentially being the same, on the same side? One's a different entity, but had the same mission?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, that's absolutely correct. There is a shared mission. The corporation is the fiduciary of the funds. They direct the investments. They determine terms and conditions on the loans. The commission is the, if you will, the sort of the policy-setting side that controls the student aid programs or outreach activities that Representative Guerra referenced, but they work essentially as an integrated organization.
Thank you. Second question, just to amplify the questions from the representative from the North Pole. If you figure the cost of, of your money is 3.75% on the open market, add to it your 2.5% administrative cost, that gives you the consumer rate of 6.25% currently. That's the current structure. But if we're able to get money on the market at 2.75% as opposed to 3.75% as envisioned by this resolution, when you add your administrative cost, that means the rate to consumers is 5.25%. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, that is correct.
Okay. Third question.
Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Behrens, you mentioned that the court commission has never had to ask for cash assistance from the state. In essence, has never had to cash the check of the offer of full faith and credit of the state. But you did offer one implication on that there was one time when the commission got a bridge loan, and I think you said to pay back the state. I'm not quite sure. Could you amplify what you meant by that? What was the circumstances that led to that?
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Sadler, after the asset-backed market collapsed, the bond market collapsed in 2007. Mm-hmm. It basically, the student loan-backed bonds were tainted by what happened with the mortgage industry. Investors became very wary of certain asset-backed bonds, which included the student loan. So the cost on those bonds became exorbitant for anybody who was in the market at the time. So we were not able to go into the market and issue debt for a period of time. So in order for us to continue to meet loan demand during the next 2 or 3 years, the legislature authorized the Department of Revenue to enter into a loan agreement with us. So for they had to do it as an investment of the state, which required that they charge an interest rate that was similar to what they would otherwise have received on other investments. So the corporation entered into that agreement with the state, borrowed, I believe, we used about $68 million of a total $100 million line of credit, essentially, with the state, and paid that back. And Charlene can correct me, but I believe the interest that we paid on that debt to the state was around 3.8 or 4% during that period of time.
Thank you. And let me have one more question through the chair.
One more, Representative Sadler.
So you're talking about the bond market collapse in 2007. The circumstances that led to the state, to the commission needing to borrow from the state, are those something that happens as part of the normal, 10-year business cycle, or was that an extraordinary condition that doesn't happen in 50 or 100 years?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, that was considered a sort of a once-in-a-generation collapse, and it really was the result of what had happened in the mortgage market, where subprime lending activity had been going on for a period of time.
I just want to probe that. Just on that last point, just once in a generation, like once every 20 years, or what do you mean by once in a generation? Should we expect that kind of thing to happen every 20 years? Or
then we have a recession.
Yeah. I'm just trying to see. Look, obviously, I'm going to the question of how often do you think it might call into question the ability of the corporation to carry its debt loan by itself.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I would not expect to see that happen again. It was it led to a series of changes in the market itself, structurally in the market, rating agencies, bond insurers. It was a catastrophic collapse that has led to just a changing of the rules of play in the market. So I would not expect that to occur again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate
okay,
it.
Is there any further questions from committee? Seeing none, does the sponsor have any final comments?
No, thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Sadler, can you walk us through the fiscal note?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just a moment. Brief at ease. We're back on the record. Representative Sadler, can you walk us through the fiscal note?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Senate SGR 2 version W for whiskey has a single fiscal note. It's a zero fiscal note from the Office of the Governor. Appropriation is elections, allocation, elections. OMB component number 21. There are no position changes.
Thank you. If it's the will of the committee, I'd like to move this bill. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move Senate Joint Resolution 2, version 29-LS0010-W Whiskey from Finance Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Any objections? Seeing no objections, we have moved SJR 2 from committee, and with that, we'll do a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. We're back on the record. We will now bring back House Bill 245, Permanent Fund, Deposits, Dividends, and Earnings by House Rules by request of the Governor. We have a House Finance CS for this bill, version N. Representative Newman, can I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move committee substitute for House Bill 245, Finance Version 29GS2859N, November, for committee discussion as a working document.
Any objection? Seeing none, we'll be addressing the CS, House Bill 245. At this point, I'd like to have my staff, Jane Pearson, to come forward, put yourself on the record, and walk us through the sectional for the version N.
For the record, my name is Jane Pearson, staff to Representative Steve Thompson. Section 1 is intent language for a three-year reevaluation of this program. Section 2, AS3630015, Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation procurement. The Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation can adopt its own procurement procedures as long as they are similar to the state of Alaska's procurement codes. Section 3, AS3630990L adds Permanent Fund Corporation to the list of those exempt from the State of Alaska procurement requirements. Section 4, AS3705540D tells the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation to manage and invest assets of the Constitutional Budget Reserve. This has an effective date of 7/1/17. Section 5 is AS3705565A, and it deals with the Armoretta Hess money no longer flowing into the Capital Income Fund. Section 6 is AS3710430A. Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation shall manage the Constitutional Budget Reserve rates by the effective date of 7/1/17. Section 7, AS3710430B. Is an annual report by the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation to the legislature regarding the Constitutional Budget Reserve account. Section 8 is AS3713010. Dedicated deposits of royalties to the Permanent Fund are reduced from the current 25-50 split in old new leases to the constitutional minimum of 25%. Section 9 requires the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation to determine the net income of the earnings reserve account and excludes unrealized gains or losses. Section 10, AS3713140, defines percent of market value payout at 5.25% of the average year-end market value of the earnings reserve account for the first five of the most recent 6 years of the payout, and the payout may not exceed the year-end balance of the earnings reserve account. This also includes the new volatility provision. A chart of this has been given to you with your packet. And the payout limited dollar for dollar beyond revenue of $1.2 billion. Section 11 deals with inflation proofing, and when there is four times the amount in the account that is needed, it rolls back into the corpus of the permanent fund. Section 12 states dividends are comprised of 20% of the 5.25% of market value, the 20% of the prior year's royalties, and excludes those dedicated to the permanent fund dividend or school fund. Section 13 is conforming language to the new procurement for the Permanent Fund Corporation. Section 14 states that the Mental Health Trust Fund may not be included in the computation of available income for distribution under the PMOV. Section 15 addresses AS3714031C, makes computation of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Fund's income consistent with the computation of other permanent fund income. Section 16 is AS4323025A, is a transfer of the dividend fund, requires an appropriation by the legislature. Section 17, AS 43-23-025A, the amount of each permanent fund dividend for fiscal years 2017, 18, and 19 shall be $1,000. Section 18, AS 43-23-045A, conforms to Section 12, which moves dollars to the dividend by appropriation.
Slow down just a little bit, please.
Okay. Section 19 states that once the money is in the dividend fund, the Department of Revenue shall annually pay dividends without further appropriation. Section 20 is repealers. First repealer is AS 3710-430C, which is the subaccount of the CBR. It's no longer needed because if the CBR is invested at a higher percentage in the permanent fund, there is enough liquidity that they will not need a subaccount. AS 3713-145B repeals the dividends based on statutory net income. AS 3713-145C, inflation proofing. And AS 3713-145D, Amaretta Hess. Section 21 repeals corresponding session law. Section 22 repeals the $1,000 dividend after 2019, which will now go to formula. Section 23 is transition language regarding regulations and policies adopted by the Commissioner of the Department of Revenue and the Permanent Fund Corporation. Section 24 is a retroactivity clause. Section 25 is an immediate effective date. Section 26 is an effective date of July 1, 2017. And Section 27 is an effective date of July 1, 2016.
Thank you, Ms. Pearson. At this time, we're not going to take any questions, and we are putting this bill aside. And with that, I recess the House Finance Committee to the call of the chair. It's time for the floor session.